This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Bernstein and Harris.
Make it sexy.
What's up, Chris? How are you?
Ryan Poles knows Trey Smith really well and what's going to make him come to the Bears. And if he's available, if the Chiefs do not get that deal done and Trey Smith is out there, I do think that he's going to be a Bear. It makes so much sense for the Bears. They're positioned with the fourth most cap space right now. They're in a really good position, and they see this guy as such a natural fit, not to mention all the boxes that have been checked before. So I see this one potentially coming to fruition for the Bears, and I do believe it's going to happen eventually.
Breaking news, Ian Rappaport just tweeted the Chiefs are planning to franchise tag star guard Trey Smith, sources say.
There goes that.
Oh, no!
An intriguing move.
Can we dump the last 3 minutes here, guys?
Dump him.
KC keeps one of its best players for $23.4 million on a 1 year fully guaranteed deal. God, I love live radio.
Well, Drew Dahlman, what do we think?
Hey, how about that?
No. I had prioritized Drew Dahlman because, one, he plays center, veteran guy who's the best in the free agent class. That's one. And two, I was like, I don't think Kansas City's going to let Trey leave.
Wow, this has really taken a desperate turn.
It sure has. It's sad. And you hate to see it. But more than that, you love to see it.
I do think that he's going to be a Bear.
Well,
the Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Wait, strike that. Reverse it. Sometimes.
Put your thing down, flip it, and reverse it. Is that what you're saying?
Smack it up, flip it, rub it down. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. That was fun yesterday. And I know you heard the record scratch in there, but That was real time.
No, the way you looked at me, I was like, what's going on? And you pointed to your screen, and I was like, oh, no. And Chris is talking while we're doing that. No. I'm like, oh, man.
I was waiting for, and that was the best.
Oh, man.
The dramatic irony of, I saw the tweet, and there's the picture, and Chris is, just as he's hitting the crescendo of his confidence that he's going to be a Bear.
And the Bears
I'm like, well, and I'm waiting for him to finish so I can interject with the breaking news. Oh, that was, and the fact that I have to click to make sure it's the actual Ian Rappaport, because you don't want to get burned by a fake thing. Oh, that was fun. Well, we are going to be busy today here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, the Bernstein and Harris Show. We have a production staff that consists of Adam Studzinski, Tyler Farengol, Connor O'Donnell, Matt Anaya, and Jenna Duddleston. And we are going to bring you a Friday that's going to have all the sports thoughts for you that you're going Bears. To need to take into your weekend. You'll be fully loaded with things. Bears and Cubs and NFL and White Sox and High Noon and Bulls and some college basketball and all of that. So giveaways. I'm being better about this now. So you can win a pair of tickets to the Cubs season opener watch and listen party. At some point today, we will give those away. That's at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Cubs-Dodgers in Tokyo starting 5 a.m. on March 18th. And then there's that special broadcast of Mully and Haw, all brought to you by Blue Cross of and Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. And we have Neil Young tickets. So you can listen for a chance to win a pair to see Neil Young at Huntington Bank Pavilion, Northerly Island, Wednesday, August 27th.
So what you're saying is we're in a very giving mood on this Friday.
Always. Why not? Why not? Why not be? Very interesting stuff from Brad Biggs, both on with the morning show and in his 10 combine things. Laying out a plan. He calls it the Cadillac plan. I don't know if that's a sort of a football term that just means like the best possible way of doing things. But this, it gets back to a question that I asked a couple of days ago. But do you want, is your ideal situation to not have to draft for need? By the time the draft rolls around, you've got a pretty good idea of who's manning some of these critical positions for you.
Always.
Okay. Now, I think that's a pipe dream because of their needs.
That argument can be made, but I think they have the cap space fourth most in the NFL. $79.5 million, I believe, is the number to go out and get. And remember, they're not spending top dollar on everything, but spend top dollar on the center. Get Drew Dahlman. That should be priority number one.
I agree.
That back channels, make sure that when free agency starts March 10th, that's done. No questions asked. Number two, you've got to be able to find more than two offensive linemen in free agency. Do you understand what I'm saying when I say that? And they don't all have to be starters. I'm just saying you have to really go out and say, this is the priority. We know offensive linemen get hurt. We saw last year what happens when your offensive linemen get hurt and you don't have enough depth, right? Mm-hmm. And I think because Ben Johnson is the head coach, that is going to be the priority, is getting the offensive line fixed where you could say, hey, we have a couple of second round picks. If we use one of those on a guard, fine. But everything else should be taken care of. It shouldn't be where, oh, the 10th pick is coming. We got to take this tackle. We have to.
And we know the needs are offensive line, defensive line, particularly edge.
Yes.
But
you still need more pieces than just an edge piece.
So you need both lines. You need at least one more running back, at least one more wide receiver, and at least one more tight end.
Now, here's the thing. With the running back specifically, we know this is a deep draft class for running backs. So when you talk about luxury versus need, you can go into the draft needing a running back and feel good about that.
Yep.
That's not the same as needing an offensive line. They need notice I didn't say offensive lineman. I said an offensive line. You don't want to go into this draft needing multiple positions at offensive line. You should have, let's say, four of your five starters figured out. Or, you know what, maybe not four of your five starters because there was talk of competition with Braxton Jones at left tackle, right? You should have four of, let's say, your top six linemen figured out. If you have that, you're not desperate when the number 10 pick comes around. You should be able to trade out of that pick if somebody wants to trade up to take a quarterback or something. Ryan Poles should be able to maneuver a little bit here.
Here's what Ryan Poles had to say when he was talking to the NFL Network about the Bears' free agent evaluation and how they figure out the types that are on their radar.
I think the big thing is making sure you know what type of player you're getting, because you don't get to do the research that you do while you're at the combine. You can't sit down and talk to them. So there is some risk there. So previous relationships, and also some research along the way to make sure you're bringing the right type of guys that fit your culture.
I think that's so interesting because you also have brand new perspective via Ben coming in, sort of a fresh set of eyes on not just you guys' processes, the collaborative efforts as well, mm-hmm. but also just his relationships with players and his people that he knows.
One thing that we do that I'm proud of is any new staff member that comes in, we do a cohabitation report, so that player goes through all of, let's just say, all the players in free agency that they've touched, and that could be over the last 3, 4, or 5 years. And they do a 1 or 2 liner to just give us some more information about the players that we could potentially bring in the building.
Yeah, and some of the guys that are on my top 101 free agents list.
What a plug.
you know, we're coached up by Ben Johnson last year. Kevin Zeitler, do you think you'll push a little more in free agency with the offensive line this year?
Yeah, I think there's a good opportunity for us to do that. You know, when you look at our interior, there's some space there where I think we can move the needle and get our team to take the next step. Obviously, when you do that, you get added protection in the pass game. But I think more importantly, running the ball efficiently, which creates balance. And we all know when you get to the backside of the season, December, January, February, the ability to run the ball is critical. So we'll be taking a hard look at that spot.
They're going to run the ball indeed. That's good. That's
the plan.
Is the unsexy unlocking of everything. As much as we want to talk about cadences and huddle breaks and
by people you mean us.
Shift. Yeah, because but it's not sexy, but running the football
solves a lot of problems.
Effectively is where this all starts.
Yeah, and you heard the mention of Kevin Zeitler, right? That's like the perfect bridge guy. So he's 34 years old. Played for the I hear you.
That's a lot of breakdown risk.
Okay.
34 is a lot of collapse risk.
Okay. Again, it's not just about getting all the guys, because maybe you draft a guy and you don't know if he's ready or not, but Kevin Zeitler is ready to play football. He played 16 games last year, started all 16. He's had, you got to go back to 2014, the last time he didn't start at least 15 games. That's durability. Mm-hmm. Ben Johnson, familiarity? Yes. Familiar with what Ben Johnson might want to do? Absolutely.
Cohabitation report. I don't know why.
I like it. They live together. They've worked in the same space. They've cohabitated.
It just seems like an unnecessarily syllabic.
Some people would say it's a Dan Bernstein type term. Something you bring out of the
wait a second
dungeon just to be like, hey, look at this word.
I'm supposed to like the multisyllabic word. The could you please now begin your cohabitation report?
I'm not familiar with the terminology.
Cohabitation report commencing. You know, it's
they're former coworkers. How about that?
Yeah, it's just 1 or 2 liner. I'd love to read some of those. Like, stay away from this guy. Piece of crap.
You think is that? I think it's a little more multisyllabic than that.
Well, but not if you don't need to be. I mean, if that's your report on a guy,
no.
Bad guy, don't want him in the building.
Just be like, no, open parentheses. No is a complete sentence.
Yes.
Close parentheses.
Yes. No on this guy, if I have anything to do with it. And you say, this guy, well, maybe, but he his injury he didn't disclose, or he's a weirdo or something.
It'd be different if the Bears are one of these teams that is in serious cap trouble, because there's a lot of those, and they're going to be able to take advantage of other
the
teams.
Falcons.
That are the Falcons, the Saints, perpetual cap problems, right? Take advantage. That's why Drew Dahlman is going to be out here.
And what is he, 26?
That sounds accurate.
I think that's right. You know, that's not 34. That's a dude. And 26, Drew Dahlman. And you're going to let that guy go. Now, he's going to be expensive.
Okay, that's why you have the money. That's the point. Mm-hmm. You have the money to go and get the guys you need.
I guess I'd rather spend $14-15 million a year on a center than I would
a 26-year-old center? Yes.
Yeah, than I would 25 on a guard.
Let's go back a week ago. What was I telling you about prioritizing? I said the center is more important. There will be other guards.
Mm-hmm.
There are more. I just told you about one. I like Mekhi Becton. You know, I like the guy when they used to play tackle. Now they're playing guard and they're better because they're bigger and
have better feet.
Yeah. So all of that comes into play. So when you're talking about, do you want to be able to draft out of a luxury or need? Man, listen, free agency is first. Take care of your needs in free agency since you have the cap space to do so.
It depends where you are in your timetable as a team, too. That I understand if you're further away, you'd rather not spend money for pro players perhaps that other teams don't want to retain. And I think I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all philosophy here. The Bears, however, are in this quarterback's rookie deal window.
We know how important that is when you're not paying the quarterback the ridiculous amount of money that quarterbacks get paid after they survive and flourish. If you turn the corner as a quarterback, there's like this base level. I just point to one contract in particular, right? Daniel Jones got paid and was bad. And the Giants were bad after he got paid because of that. They had to pay him. On a rookie deal, you can do whatever because you're not having to pay your quarterback an obscene amount of money. But if you have a quarterback that's any good that you want to retain, you're going to have to pay him an obscene amount of money.
What I don't want out of free agency is the Keenan Allen deal again.
What?
Where you get somebody at just the wrong time.
I thought Keenan Allen was fine.
I didn't. For that money?
After he got past the injury, he was fine.
Yeah,
fine. But he was too many big drops.
Well, and keep in mind that was a trade, not a free agent sign.
Yeah, but too many big drops. I don't like 32-year-old wideouts, and I get concerned about some of these. Now, this is where the Khalil Mack idea comes in. Depending on the money, I understand the shape that he's kept himself in.
Wait a minute.
And the way he could, on a 1 year.
But isn't that the same as effectively Keenan Allen? Now it wouldn't be probably for as much money. But.
Yeah, the difference is what he does isn't reliant on other people necessarily. You can pay him and know that every snap he's out there, he's going to have a value doing what he does. It's not a function of the rest of the offense. And if they want to roll help over there, fine. Then he's actually doing his job. He's affecting the offense. I just think that's a more direct application of your investment. In a 34-year-old Khalil Mack.
For a 1 year deal, how much would you want to pay Khalil Mack?
I don't even know what the range would be. I don't know what the market. Who knows if he would even want to come here? But like we were talking about, does he view the Bears as a contender? And the speculation was no. But if in fact he's not going to have his choice of teams, I would say keep that dialogue open because that would be more interesting to me. Because I just think that's a safer investment.
Did you watch the Eagles play in the playoffs and? The Super Bowl specifically, can't ever have enough help on the edge. Teams will want him.
According to SpotRack, Khalil Mack's market value. Now, this is the market value on SpotRack is kind of hit or miss, but the market value they have him at is 3 years, $70 million. So an average of 23.6. It's a little too pricey for me personally.
No. Yeah, I'm out. That's too much.
I don't think he's going to get that.
But also, I think
I wouldn't do 3 years.
He's going to go somewhere where a team is. Already playoff bound, has shown the uptick. There's no uptick here. You're starting from the bottom. They are the proverbial Drake team, and I mean that not because he lost the rap beef with Kendrick, but because of where he is.
We have some Cubs talk coming your way next, but as we go to break, I'm going to leave you with this question as we talk about the Bears and free agency. In their history, the Bears have only had three free agent signings who've made more than one Pro Bowl as a Bear, ever. Who are they? Who are the three Bears free agents that made more than one Pro Bowl as a Bear? I think each one made two. So think about that, and then we'll pay that off on the other side as we also get into some Cubs talk on the Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to streeteasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Obviously, transactions. We released Gerald Everett and DeMarcus Walker just a few days ago. With that situation, anytime you kind of have gray in terms of fit with scheme change and their contract situation, I think giving them the opportunity, giving their representation opportunity to come to the combine, get their names out there, they can get a good seat at the table with the team before all the seats are taken.
Ryan Poles. He is articulating today what the plan is going to be and how they're going to get to work and when the Bears are going to be good, I guess. I mean, I thought Ben Johnson made it very clear he thought they could be good right now.
That's what he had to say.
If everybody is willing to work and everybody sacrifices, everything was couched in some of these ifs.
Yeah, that's like, what else was he supposed to say? If he had said anything else, first of all, you would have been screaming over here. Like, what do you mean? We're paying you all this money. When now? Get it together. Yep. Figure it out.
Yep.
These would have been the things come out of Dan Bernstein's mouth.
Yep.
And I wouldn't blame you because I'd be in the same accord. Like, yeah, so I understand that's the goal of every NFL, let me back up. That's the goal of most NFL teams because it is a league built on parity. At the same time, I understand that some teams have greater obstacles to overcome. Namely, if you don't have a quarterback, you're out here firing blanks a lot. I think Caleb Williams has shown the potential to be that type of quarterback, and we'll find out if Ben Johnson, as he was hired to do, can take him to the next level, if not the penthouse of expectations. And I am really excited to see that part of it. But at the same time, without an offensive line and without somebody getting to the quarterback on the defensive side of the ball, eh.
So what does Ryan Poles think about the moves they may need to make to be competitive this year?
I think there always is. I mean, when you get to the end of each year, there's a lot of, just based on like how everything is built with contracts, it's a fresh start. I don't really believe that you can take, you know, momentum or anything from one year into the next. You really have to start over and build from the ground up. Obviously, the more continuity you have with contracts, that's helpful. So I think we can be aggressive in the way that we approach this offseason and get players in here that can help us take the next step.
Wait, you're saying that win over the Packers doesn't carry over? Are you kidding? How dare you say there's no momentum that carries over into the next season? The hell you say? I'm glad he said it. He's right.
I'm glad he said it, too.
Yeah, he's absolutely right.
And you heard that A word again, right?
Aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Be aggressive, B-E, aggressive. A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E, aggressive.
B-A-G-A-L-S-E-S-E-A-G-S, Eagles.
Don't do that. But no, seriously. So aggressive, that's not a vague term. That's overstating things, but it's not specific enough in talks of how you're going to be aggressive. I'd like to have details. And you know what the best part about this is? Maybe he doesn't know yet.
Well,
because he doesn't know how he's addressing things.
Well, he did follow that up about a willingness to be aggressive at the top of the market, at least in free agency.
Yeah, I think the clearer the vision, the more aggressive you can be. And that's important. So, You want to be selective in free agency because it just historically, like if you look at it, like it can tell you and you can learn from that. But if there's certain players that kind of hit all the check boxes that you need, there's really no reason to hold back. Like I feel like you can be aggressive in those situations.
Ryan, with DeMarcus off the roster and just knowing that the strength of this draft is the defensive line, but there's also a couple names out there in free agency, guys have requested trades and some other free agent options. Like, mm-hmm. How do you go about weighing how and when you will attack addressing that spot opposite Montez?
Yeah, that's part of what we're doing now. Again, it's a big puzzle. You know, free agency comes first. There's a lot of unknowns in the draft in terms of who's going to be there for you. I've talked about that before. You can have philosophical beliefs in how you build a football team, how you prioritize, but the supply has to match the needs, and those opportunities have to present themselves at the right time. So we're starting to put that puzzle piece together. But what I like about really the pairing so far of free agency and the draft is I do believe that the supply of players are matching our needs. So there's going to be good opportunities.
With right on Kansas City, what was your memories of your evaluations of Trey Smith?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into players that aren't on our roster right now, but I'm proud to be a part of that draft process.
Ryan, when you look at the defensive line, like whether it's end or tackle, mm-hmm. how have kind of your views in that position evolved as you've been a scout, and what teams need and what you guys need, and maybe how that messes with what Dennis is looking for to kind of find guys to kind of impact the passer?
Yeah, it's I would say it's been consistent. You really need interior, someone to really puncture the pocket from the interior for the exterior to be successful and productive as well. So it's that balance of the two.
Brian, it's no secret that you are looking to add in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Is there one side of the ball or the other that when you evaluate free agency versus the draft that maybe give you more flexibility in the draft to attack in free agency?
I think we're still kind of learning about that right now. I think we'll have more clarity when we get out of the combine and get to know some of these players even more. Our coaches, you know, have dug into free agency a lot since they've gotten on board. But we have a lot more work to do on the draft when we get back. So I got to see how we get aligned on that, too. The other thing, too, is just looking at the work that our coaches have done on free agency. We have a group of really good evaluators on the coaching staff too, which is really important.
What did you learn about Ryan? Your plan for free agency and the draft, when free agency is a little more predictable, the draft is totally unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So you don't end up, you don't want to obviously sign a high priced pass rusher mm-hmm. and then draft one at number 10. So how do you decide which needs you can fill in which season, I guess, or which option?
Yeah, there's strategy to that, but I would probably argue and say if you get a good pass rusher in free agency and you draft a good pass rusher, you can't have enough good ones. I think we all watched that last game of the season, and that proves to be true. So, but yeah, you want to see how you can put the puzzle together where you can kind of fill all the needs perfectly. Sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't.
So he balances the idea of aggressiveness with selectivity. And I think it's always a split in the baby there to be selectively aggressive. Essentially, if there's a person that we want, we will be aggressive in signing that person. And if we look at his history in free agent, signing was canceled because of a failed physical. Remember, Larry Ogunjobi?
Yes.
That was the big splash for him. is going to get Larry Ogunjobi, and then that was annulled because of a contested physical result. Then they tried to get Ryan Bates originally, remember?
Yeah.
And they remember, did they get in trouble for...
No, that was because he was an RFA, and the Bills matched the offer.
The Bills kept him. They were after him for a long time.
And then they finally got him, and he was hurt. And then the other one was Nate Davis. The moves on the trade market, hit or miss, because Chase Claypool was a miss. Montez Sweat was a hit for the time being. Maybe not as big a splash as
Jury's still out.
But it made sense for them to get a three technique when they were running the previous defense, and maybe Dennis Allen is much more set on that first person being edge. We'll see. But free agency in this Bears group has been a scattershot proposition at best.
So how do you view that TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds?
We talked about it yesterday.
The Kevin Byard. I mean, there's other moves in there. There's other free agent.
Yeah, those are. I mean, I think
Edmonds I'm probably favorable with the Edwards and the Byard specifically.
Yeah, Edwards is a hit. I think Byard was fine, and I think Tremaine Edmonds for the money just hasn't produced. You haven't gotten the on ball production stuff, the interceptions, forced fumbles,
playmaking,
recovered fumbles. Yeah, the stuff that changes games.
And there may be a chance for them to figure this out with a new defensive coordinator with Dennis Allen for those positions we're talking about. So, yeah, it will be interesting because now you've got not only Ryan Poles making these decisions, but also the heavier influence of a head coach who's getting paid a lot of money. The pressure's on him, and he knows what he needs to win. And so because you have a veteran defensive coordinator who knows what winning is, he's been with winning organizations, and you have – Ben Johnson, enough said. You've seen what that offense has done the last 3 years. I think the pressure is on Ryan Poles, but also the pressure is lessened on Ryan Poles because there's other people who are telling him this is what we need to make it work. Like with Matt Eberflus, you never got the sense that he was like, oh, go get Tremaine Edmonds, go get TJ Edwards. Maybe he did sign off on it, but it seemed like the GM was GMing and the head coach was just coaching what was given to him on the field.
And that's fine. And it sounds like that the actual dynamic isn't necessarily going to change in that regard. But it was, to me, notable that Poles also said that the free agent class and the draft align with their positions of need. So that's good. But that just means you got to be right. If you do have multiple opportunities, if this is a strong, deep tight end draft, running back draft, middle round viable offensive line draft, and some of these pieces are also there for you on this the grocery list we've been putting together for the free agents. Okay, but you got to pick the right dudes.
There's also a chance that because there's what you feel like more available in your area of need, that the odds of you being right go up because there's more than one player who can satisfy that need. I think I look at it that way a little bit more because unless you're talking about the very, very, very top of the market, there's going to be some adequate guys, let's say above average to above average.
This is where development comes in.
Well, yeah.
This is where if you really trust a new coaching staff, there might be a pick where you say this year, maybe that's Amagaji. And maybe the first blush stuff from him was shaky. But they see the finished product. They have a vision for the finished product there that we just don't know or see. And I don't know that's the secret sauce. That's when all of a sudden guys arrive on the scene and you're like, well, whoa, we didn't know this guy could do that.
Also, I'm not making excuses for Amagaji, but we heard it from people who played the game, who coach. He was not put in a great situation for his first NFL. Like, let's see what you can do on the road with the snap count stuff, never having played in front of that many people. So I'll be optimistic, Dan. I'll be the one and somewhat pragmatic in saying he should be better prepared in his next opportunity, whatever that might be with the Bears.
I'm expecting him to be a functional, useful piece on the offensive line. I don't know if he's going to be part of their top five. I have no clue what that top five is going to look like.
And you know what? I'll say this. It's okay if he's not part of the top five this season if he gives you some really good depth. Because they need that. Because last time I checked, how many different versions of the offensive line did they run out there last year? Too many is what I would say. Too many versions of the offensive line.
Well, they're all going to play. Guys get hurt.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you need the depth.
Yeah, but again, having guys isn't depth.
No. I'm saying if he's good, as in better than last year, but still doesn't make the top five, that's fine as long as he is valuable depth as opposed to just a guy, as you're saying.
And I hope they're developing him. I hope they know as guys are coming along the stuff that they see in practice that they can keep testing people and keep getting the most of it. It's just not like other sports where you have a minor league system where people can play and you can say, hey, try this position, try that position. It's got to be in practice. And that's when you hear Ben Johnson talking about intensity and being uncomfortable, that's where the quality of practices matter. If you get teams that are just going through the motions, you're not going to be able to develop people as well. You don't have somebody playing on your minor league team in Rockford or your team in South Bend under different eyes and a different schedule and doing all that. They're all right there in your building having to be sharpened by your own guys. So if that gets back to culture, where if people are working that hard, it's going to help your development. It's going to help guys improve at practice.
So on Amagaji text line 563, wasn't he hurt during most of the training camps as well?
Yes.
Grady in Iowa. Yeah, he was. No, I'm saying I'm hoping it's better for him this time around. And this is a this is a time where wish casting kind of comes into play, right? We have 229 on the text line. Oh man, Buda Baker is available. I don't care how old he is. He is a pro's pro and would fit in with our great defense. Great. I'm not seeing that fit. That it's needed. Am I crazy?
No,
for saying that?
That's a bad spend.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know where that comes from.
Well, and they don't. As of right now, you're planning on Jaquan Brisker being in the lineup to start this next season. Now, I think they long term need to look at another strong safety. But, like, you don't need another safety this offseason. Unless you're going to draft one and have him ready to come up.
Well, let me ask you guys this, though. Do we know anything about Jaquan Brisker now?
That's what I was saying earlier.
We don't know.
And to my knowledge, he was not asked about Jaquan Brisker, right, Studs?
Well, no, but I'm presuming, like, unless he said otherwise, no, I'm presuming he's going
to
be healthy.
Yeah, Brisker has been telling people he's good to go. That's all I know. Is that there hasn't been anything there's been nothing official, but there's been nothing to suggest that all of a sudden there's going to be some last physical test or a neurological exam that's going to be, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down on his participation. Based on everything I understand, the resting presumption is that he's ready, you know, full bore.
I just know he went down last year, Dan, and I thought he'd probably come back, and he never did.
Well, he could also be out after one hit this year.
Yeah, that's the concern level, because now where we are on the concussion, you know, it's the way that chart goes with the exponential factor of every time you take one, the recovery is more, the damage long term is more.
And the likelihood of having the next one be even worse again, exactly, with less impact keeps going up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. The exponential nature of how concussions work, what we understand about them. Listen, wish cast all you want. I hope everybody's wishes and dreams come true. I just hope there's a competent football team on the field come this fall.
It better be more than competent.
And before, yes, you're right, but competence is a good place to start.
Yeah, well, if that means winning a lot of games, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's no time to waste here. This young quarterback has a contract that has
take advantage of it.
Finite number of years on it. And this is when you gotta go. I'm not here for a long runway for this group. There's been too much time frittered away already with that coach that you should never have come back last year, and you're still digging out.
That's absolutely true.
That's the lesson.
Nothing
you
said is incorrect.
It's serious. It's except for the Cubs. It's all these Chicago sports teams. It's just, you know, go already. It's everything's late.
Whole lot of wind up and no go.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We want a physical group, all right? It starts with that, and that's not just the offensive line, that's the entire team. DA and I have been talking about what that looks like on defense. It's going to look that way on offense. Starts in the trenches up front. We talk about finishing in a dominant position. We want to be around the football. The best football players, they finish around the ball. And so that's what you're going to see from our unit, the five guys that we roll into. And it's not even just going to be five. Last few years, it ends up being 6, 7, 8, 9 guys end up playing significant number of snaps. So we've got to find those five best guys, but we also have to get a good bullpen, if you will, ready to go in at a moment's notice.
Love it. I love the way he thinks about line play of being dominant, strong on the ball, around the ball. Yes, yes, yes. More of that.
Much like the Dodgers, just everybody can handle the high leverage because that's what every play is for an offensive lineman. Big. It's big. One guy messes up. Guess what? Play's dead. Now you're behind the sticks.
Well, we saw that too many times. Tired.
It was the default.
Tired of seeing that. Among other things around the NFL today, just the other bullet points, Travis Kelce's coming back. According to Brett Veach, he's ready to go, looking forward to have this final year of his deal. It looks like this is going to be the swan song season for Travis Kelce one way or another. Eric DeCosta, the general manager of the Ravens, has for the first time addressed the 16 accusers, the allegations against Justin Tucker. They're slow walking it, saying they're going to let the NFL finish their investigation before they make a decision, but they're called it serious and concerning, so they're at least being aware. Brian Gutekunst said, we don't want the tush-push anymore. We don't like it, so we're going to file a grievance to get rid of it.
Also, back to Brett Veach, he revealed the Chiefs were pleasantly surprised about that elevated cap number that we learned about. And with it came greater optimism about retaining right guard Trey Smith. And he says he's, quote, unquote, pretty optimistic and that they've already had some good dialogue with him. That is, of course, not the news that perhaps some Bears fans want to hear.
If it means that they throw resources at a center, I'm actually not displeased.
Yeah, but you're going to need a Mekhi Becton type or someone else. And I say that like it's only one person. They need two guards. And maybe they'll get one in the draft. Maybe they'll get a free agent one. And then they'll get maybe the top center in this year's free agent class. But they've got to build an offensive line. And the good news is Ben Johnson believes they can do that in one offseason.
The new Jets head coach is Aaron Glenn. He was the Lions defensive coordinator last year across the field at practice from Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator. And I'm not going to use the passive voice here because the score's Mark Grody. Went over and asked Aaron Glenn about Ben Johnson.
Ben's he's a very, very smart man. He knows offense inside and out. The other good thing about Ben is he understands defense also. So for him to get a chance to attack other teams, that's one thing he looks at quite a bit. That's how the defense, and especially the way they maneuver with receiver motion and things like that. So, listen, that's going to be a tough division that he's in. Listen, all four of those teams are good teams in that division. So I look forward to seeing how he operates there.
See, back to the maneuvering with receiver motion again.
Back to that.
Everything's a tool.
Everything has to matter. From the moment you break that huddle, you can force the defense to show you things they don't want to show you and tell you things they don't want you to know. You can force them to do it. You can do it by going empty. You can do it by calling somebody into motion. A lot of teams are using the orbit motion now, whether it's reducing the formation. Everything matters. And this is where they have to get it better. And sometimes it's once the quarterback has begun his cadence. When you get somebody off guard, off balance, you can change what they show you as to who might be coming and who might be dropping back. So finally, this level of detail is going to be there from the moment. And I don't know what Shane Waldron tried to do.
It didn't work,
but though. But whatever it was, got people fired.
Yes, including Shane Waldron. It's interesting because that was one of the early talking points from Ben Johnson, is how he described, you know, we are still planning to tear this thing down to the studs, and it's going back to basics of football for the spring. And he said he has not yet worked with Caleb Williams, but that is coming. And all the things you just said tie into what we just heard Aaron Glenn say about how this offense works under Ben Johnson, regardless of the plays that you're drawing up specifically and how you're tailoring it to a much more mobile quarterback in Caleb Williams. But more importantly, can he get command of the things he needs to get command of as a second-year quarterback to make this thing purr?
He had me at smart. I mean, that's just nice to hear. And although we didn't talk to Grody about it, but when Johnson talked about these breakfast club meetings that he's having with Harry Fried.
You know what? I meant to clarify that because I wasn't exactly sure what they were talking about. Is that the plan for the quarterback? Is that how you took that?
Because that sounds like something the quarterback's coach would do, not just your analytics guy.
But I think what that is they are developing what they're going to roll out. They're developing their Caleb plan without Caleb in the mix yet, which, you know, that's normal, I would think. They're developing what they're going to bring to the table for Caleb.
Well, no, because I think that maybe we can pull that up in a second here, but I think what he was talking about was game management from his perspective.
Situations.
Yes, not about the quarterback stuff. They were talking about game. So when he said, like, treat me like a rookie quarterback, he's talking about, like, treat me like I've never called a game before and, like, walk me through how we should handle all of this.
Scoring situation, yes. Of this is when we go for two, this is when we don't, this is when this part of our playbook is open, or this is what fourth down conversion numbers tell us, depending on where the kick line is. Like, if you're just that, where it's basically algorithmic in a lot of ways, and say, if we can count on this, this, and this, or if you're okay with it here and here, this is where we're going to plan to regularly go for it. And this is an absolute punting situation. This is your jurisdiction, your gray area. You think that's what it is, Studs?
Maybe so. Maybe I'm not sure how Studs took it, but it's interesting because I was trying to decipher what specifically he was talking about. Like, I heard the answer, but I was like, wait, is he talking about it, or is he talking about? And I never quite understood what it was, and that's a miss on my part because I didn't ask Grody, and I meant to ask Grody. But
yeah, I was thinking that too. That slipped through also because I had that written down and then I didn't get to it. But whatever that concept is analytically of how decisions are going to be informed, you don't want the tail wagging the dog, but you want to make sure there's a balance and say the likelihood of this working and or the likelihood of us winning. If we convert on this play, this has an X correlation to us winning the game. You want to know that somebody's on the right side of that stuff.
Do they have that on the second to last play in the game against the Washington Commanders?
Well,
the likelihood of, if you know, you don't get a first down here, just get into Hail Mary range. Sorry, that just the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah, I know, but the problem was after the fact, they tried to justify it. It didn't matter. And everyone's like, yes, it did. It absolutely
mattered.
That's
when I knew that Matt Eberflus should be fired. That's when I was like, this guy can no longer continue to coach. But yet he continued to what? Coach.
Nominally. When he was saying things like, yeah, well, this didn't really make a difference. And the other team told you it did. They said it did, that it made a huge difference.
So did everyone else around the NFL.
Yeah, we liked the way we handled that. And then, well, the whole Detroit fiasco, the Thanksgiving meltdown was what got it done. Studs, did you isolate the stuff about the Harry Fried and analytics? Let's hear it.
I'm not working with the quarterback right now, but I will be soon enough. So we already have a plan in place in terms of Harry Fried was already on staff. He's someone I've got a relationship with from going back to Miami. I think very highly of him, and I'm really looking forward to sitting down. We've already started this process. We call it the Breakfast Club. He and I go 30 minutes every day right now, and he's just taking, I said, teach me like I'm a rookie quarterback from the start to the finish. And so we're about halfway through his program right now. And so once we get through that, we'll make a decision on where we want to go in terms of when the players get in and educating them on how we want to handle the situations that can pop up and potentially win or lose ball games for us.
Okay, so that last sentence
cleared it up.
Yeah, I wasn't sure up until then about that. They're talking about situations. Here's what we should be looking to do here on the field, here on the clock, here on the scoreboard.
And then right. Go ahead.
It's a little confusing because he starts kind of talking about Caleb, and he clearly shifts his thought to something else.
But the bottom line is they're going to sit Caleb down and discuss these situations, game situations. This is how you should be. This is what you should be thinking in this situation. That's what they're talking about and discussing.
Bernstein and Harris.
Jarrett Payton.
Marshall, you've done a really, really good job.
Middays, 10 till 2.
You guys have become the perfect match, man. It is so much fun to listen to.
There's probably some steps skipped in the very beginning, just in terms of building the foundation.
Gotcha.
Some of the things that you have to have and what I believe to operate at a high level in this league, even as a rookie. And I think that was accelerated probably a little bit.
Yeah, Ryan Poles sharing his thoughts from the combine where he and an army of Bear staffers are trying to figure out who's doing what and how well for the next few days, Dan. And, you know, the focus really hasn't been on the draft because, you know, Ben Johnson keeps talking. So we haven't had as much of him perhaps saying, you know, who they're going to take. Not like he's going to share state secrets or anything. But when Ben Johnson's talking as much as he has, all the focus is really going to be on that. And maybe that's a nice little, you know, opportunity for them to not distract, but certainly give something else for us to talk about. And Ben Johnson has not disappointed, whether he's talking about how much he squats or the fact that he would give up a testicle for a Super Bowl championship.
Not one of his, though.
No, that's what they asked him, what body part. He said it was the question that had been proposed about, would you sacrifice a Bears fan's life for a Super Bowl championship? And he said, what if I just give up a body part of mine? And then he says, okay.
Well, I mean, that stuff.
He has three kids, so he doesn't need one of his testicles.
I'm much more interested in.
And that's probably another reason why he should stop talking so much. Because stories of that.
It doesn't bother me. Like I said, there's no downside to it if he just wants to try to get out there and have fun and make headlines. He was with CBS Sports, however, getting really specific about Caleb Williams' first season. Because remember, he said that they were going to sit down and watch the first season together. The first season of this particular show, and
Supercut.
They were gonna. It sounded like every play,
right.
And that they were gonna listen and they say, "What's in your head here? What are you being told?" Because they've got to go back sort of forensically and figure out what all those mistakes were too, and say, "Well, we're not doing it this way. We're not doing it that way. You didn't see this right, and here's why." So this is his discussion of how they can improve their quarterback.
He had a solid rookie year. You know, there were ups, there were downs. When you watch the tape, the talent flashes each and every single game. I think he grew as a player from the start of the season to the end. And what I'm encouraged about is we're going to get a very coachable version of Caleb going forward. If you look back at it, really, it was probably the least successful year he's had as a quarterback for a long time, if ever. And so he is determined to be a great one in this league. And so I'm really encouraged with the fact that he's going to come in here this springtime, open arms, and be willing to learn everything that we can possibly load up on him.
What are tweaks one and two that you want to make with him, whether it be mechanics, X's and O's, the sort of scheme that you're going to have in there? What are, when you were watching the film of the Chicago Bears, when you were going against them and watching Caleb, what are a couple of top-level things that you got to go in there and work on?
It all starts before the snap, in my opinion, with the quarterback position. And so when you look at it, it did not always look natural for him going from the college offense to more of a huddle procedure, get up motions, shifts, cadence. And so little things like that, I think naturally it's going to slow down immensely for him going into year two, but we're going to look to put a little pressure on him that way so that we can speed up that process. Once we get that down, then we'll load him up with volume of pass concepts and things of that nature.
Again, college offense to huddle procedure. Snap counts, motions, shifts, cadence.
I love that it's all organized. I love that it's repetitive. I love that the message is crystal clear. He knows, and I'm sure they've already talked about this to a degree, right? But the fact that it's being hammered home through the media, everybody understands this is the page that we are on. That's not just a message for us. That's not just a message for the fans. That's a message not just for Caleb Williams, but for the entire offense. Think about how frustrated those members of the offense were last season at different points of the season, right?
Starting in training camp.
With
this stuff.
Yes. And they didn't address it. And that's why I wish I knew when Ryan Poles said, you know, we skipped steps or however what he said. This is evidence that they're focused on this thing to be corrected more than anything else.
Put all this stuff together. When we saw on the NFLPA survey that Matt Eberflus was finished last among all head coaches, in large part because he didn't listen to the players and he didn't listen to the leadership council. What were the players and the leadership council telling him early in the season?
Accountability.
But specifically with the offense, the quarterback, and everything that was going on with the problems they were having doing these things. Everything that they talked about, right, all the hiccups in training camp that everybody could see in the open parts of practice where they couldn't get plays in properly, everything was disjointed because of huddle procedure, snap count, cadence, motions, shifts. This has been, the fact that this was so pervasive and on Ryan Poles' watch, like, why wasn't this fixed? And it makes me retroactively unhappy to know that, like, this was going on. The players were shouting it from the rooftops that this all needed to be fixed.
It's funny because when we hear about the players talking about accountability throughout the season, right? At first, I'm like, well, which players are they talking about? And you hear maybe it's the quarterback and they're not holding him accountable. But at the end of the day, you know who it was they were talking about? They were talking about the head coach. The head coach is not being accountable for holding people accountable. The head coach is not being accountable for the decisions he made in-game. It all went like a flow chart back to Matt Eberflus.
Yes. Everything led back to Powdered Toast Man. And finally, they decided that he was done. And But I always say this, it comes out after the fact, and which is why when players do start to say things and when captains start to say, oh, maybe this, maybe that, when Cole Kmet can't wait to pull up a reporter aside and go, this sucks and this sucks and this sucks. And DJ Moore is like, I don't know, man, I don't know. Like that's our job, to try to tell you, listen to what they're saying. Listen to what this all means. It means there are enormous problems here. And it took them too long to get some of this stuff fixed. You know, we had a bunch of people yesterday who, when we were talking about huddle procedure, and texts like, who cares how they break the huddle? Who cares about any of this stuff? I'm telling you.
I missed that text.
That sounds like high school. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
and that's why it's not high. It's the opposite of that. High schools don't teach the same amount of nuance to diagnosing what a defense is going to do. In the NFL, from the moment you break the huddle and you look across, there are things to be learned. And all the great quarterbacks start on they're taught how to start learning these things. Some never get it. Some are just too unaware and too bad or too dumb. But some who aren't can say, where are they standing? Why are they standing there? When I motion somebody here, why did they move or not move? Who moved and why? Who moved over a gap? Who took a step backward? They're ahead of it. By the time the ball is snapped, as Tom Brady said, by the time the ball is snapped, he's got you. And that's where you want it to be. That's the stuff that Ben Johnson's talking about.
I think too many people, when they hear the term reading a defense and a quarterback can't read the defense, they think that they're talking about everything post-snap. But there's more than enough pre-snap to tell whether or not the quarterback is seeing things correctly and able to read what's in front of him.
Those are different times in the chess match. Post-snap is different. Usually, you can get a clue as to what post-snap is going to look like. But one thing that Caleb is going to have to learn is how to snapshot things. And if they're going to use more play action, and I understand why they didn't. I think the Bears ranked last in play action used. And part of that is asking a young quarterback who hasn't played in a pro-style offense to turn his back to the defense, to sell that fake, then to pick eyes up and know what he's seeing and why he's seeing it.
Yeah, you got to know where you're going to go. That's the bottom line.
And you have to know where the defense is trying to make you go, what they're trying to make you think you're seeing. And if they're going to use as much play action, I'll say this about Jared Goff. And I know that they're needling him and having fun with him and the whole thing, but Jared Goff is very good at that. Jared Goff is great at selling that fake, and he's great at coming out of the fake and having a good idea of what's in front of him.
It helps when you have a good running game that's a threat also when you're dealing with play action. So, again, back to the offensive line for the purpose of figuring things out going forward. We've got free agency, then we've got the actual draft, and that's going to be a large part in whether you're even going to be able to sell. Even if Caleb Williams is making the right decisions, if you don't have the personnel in front of him to get the job done, it's not going to matter.
Right, but even independent of that, you can with play action, you can make an average offensive line look really good.
You can make things happen that normally wouldn't happen.
You can buy a little bit of time. You can cause indecision. You can begin to win the timing battle even before a block is thrown. If you're doing it right, everybody lifts everybody. It isn't just, well, you got to keep us all clean back here to do what we have to do. If you've got a well-timed offense and a well-spaced offense, it makes the blocking easier. And if you know pre-snap where you're trying to build those open spaces, whether it is layers between the lines of the defense, over, you know, in front of the linebackers or over the linebackers in front of the safeties, back shoulder stuff where you're using routes to stretch the field and guys come back on their stems. By the time you come out of that fake, you've got to know I've got enough room or I don't have enough room to deliver this ball. And that's my expectation of why this could get so much better so quickly.
Yeah, I think some people would argue your expectation is complicated versus, or I'm sorry, too high versus a very simple, and this should be the basic expectation. And I think, yeah, that should be a basic expectation. Would you just explain, with a guy like Ben Johnson now in charge, and he says he's got all his lieutenants and everybody he wants in place, this should go a certain way. And if it doesn't, that's telling.
We got a little bit of breaking news here. Breaking news on the scores brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. ESPN reports Cubs second baseman Nico Horner will not go to Japan with the team to open the season next month. He is still recovering from flexor tendon surgery, and he'll stay back to continue his rehab.
That was presumed on my end, but yeah, I understand it's official news. So now you've got no Matt Shaw, no Nico Horner. You need half an infield reserves to figure it out, which gives them some flexibility to figure out the back half of their or the back end of their roster. But at the same time, you need to have guys who are going to be good, especially when you're playing the Dodgers. Nobody's it. You're not playing just like nobody. You're playing the Dodgers.
This segment's brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. When we come back, Ben Johnson was asked about his energy level and just how it's like you're everywhere all at once. How is this going to translate to your actual coaching? So he talked about it. He talked about everything. So we'll talk about that next.
Back, 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 back,
Bernstein and Harris.
Phil, you're on the score.
Dan, I don't always like you, but I seem to lean your way most of the time.
Middays, Tindall 2.
Thanks. No, crazy.
We have 7 on the clock, 19 seconds to go. Harden against Collins. Harden comes up shooting. Bam!
Wow.
Oh, no! It goes to Kobe White. Kobe, topside from 35 feet. Good. Nice job by Kobe.
Yeah.
31 minutes. That's his fourth triple. And the ball game is over. And the Clippers come away with a win, 122 to 117.
All right, well, that's great. The problem is the Nets lost. The Raptors lost. The Sixers lost. Those teams are better at trying to maximize their draft capital than the Bulls are. And that's too bad.
What do you want, Dan? What if I tell you?
I've been very clear.
Tell me what you want between now and the end of the season.
I would like for them to lose as many games as possible.
Okay. To what end?
To get the best possible chance at a top four pick this year.
What do you see that as being? How high do you think they can climb in
the
tankathon standings? No, because here's why I'm asking you now to clarify that. Because when you look at the standings, and you see that it's not in a vacuum. There are obviously other teams, quote unquote, chasing, what is it called? Capture the flag this year? You know, every year we got to have a nice cliche to go with it. But as of right now, they have the eighth worst record in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can get to 6 by my calculations because they have 23 wins. The Brooklyn Nets have 21 wins. And the Sixers, and their current 9-game losing streak, have 20 wins. So they are 3 wins better than the Sixers. They are 2 wins better than the Nets. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they can get to 6 in theory.
Okay, great.
If they lose more.
Great.
Here's the problem. Right ahead of them right now, with one more win than them, is the San Antonio Spurs, who have lost 4 in a row and don't have the services of one super sophomore, Victor Wembanyama.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose more games.
Yep.
Ahead of them are the Portland Trailblazers, who have 26 wins. Now, luckily, they've won 3 in a row. The Blazers are closer to a play-in spot than they are to the Bulls. You got that? Over in the Western Conference. The Phoenix Suns only have 27 wins. The Heat only have 27 wins. So the Bulls, if they start winning games at a, let's say, 1 out of every 4 rate, could potentially catch more teams and end up with maybe the 10th or 11th worst record. And that would be...
I think it's got to be worse than a 250 winning percentage, though.
Right. Yes, they need to lose more than 3 out of every 4 games the rest of the way.
Right.
There's 23 games left. You want them to lose, let's say...
All of them.
18.
I want them to lose all of them.
But realistically... Are you benching Billy Donovan? Is that a thing that can happen?
I'd like to figure out some way to make this team less competitive.
The only reason I say that is because if you look at their last 4 games, they've been in every game. It's been close.
I know.
They've only won one. You're kind of lucky they've only won one game.
Way too close.
But you said it's dinner theater, right? They're in the
I'm saying they think that. I'm not saying I want that. I want them to lose every game.
I have bad news. They're not going to lose every game.
I know.
They're also going to win some games coming up. You know how we talk about playout games? The Raptors have 18 wins. They've created some separation. But they kind of need to lose their next game tomorrow against the Raptors.
It's worth 2.
Yeah, because it's the Raptors. It's worth 2.
That's why that game against the Sixers was a disaster.
Now they're 2.5 games above the Sixers. And
yes.
Sixers aren't getting closer.
That's over.
Yeah, they've probably been knocked out.
They passed you.
So now it's down to them and the Brooklyn Nets for the play-in spot. You know AK wants to see this team go to the play-in tournament.
I don't understand why.
Probably because they're in the postseason for another year.
This is the disconnect. This is what makes no sense. And I thought when they traded for a bunch of journeymen that maybe those guys wouldn't necessarily be interested, but here we are, Trey Jones, Zach Collins, Kevin Huerter, as Billy Donovan says, all making an impact.
All 3 of those guys have been great. You know, the first thing is they're great guys. I do think, you know, sometimes situations present themselves where maybe opportunities aren't there for someone, you know, like Zach that's playing the center spot in San Antonio, and they've got obviously Victor, it's, you know, it can be challenging, but it doesn't take away from him being a good player. And, you know, he wasn't maybe playing a lot earlier. And then, you know, Vooch goes down, it creates an opportunity for him. And, you know, he's really responded and played well. I think Kevin's a guy that, you know, I think the more and more you watch him play, he's got a lot of different things that he can do besides shoot the basketball. And I think it probably took him a little time just to get his legs under, feel comfortable. But he's shot the ball well here, you know, since the break, which has been great. And Trey's like a really, really heady point guard, doesn't really turn it over, you know, and he knows, you know, the shots that he should be taking. And, you know, he generates good looks for other guys. And then I think just defensively, he's a guy that can pick up full. So I think all three of those guys have added, without question, have added to our team.
Oh, I know. I've watched them add to the team. I thought that, I don't know how interested they were going to be in playing this hard, but yeah, I mean, ideally, can we just send Billy on vacation for a while and like let Benny the Bull coach the team?
You think that's the answer?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I keep saying, damn, Billy and his stupid good coaching is going to make this team further away from winning a title.
So, you know, Josh Giddey, our favorite bantered about Bull, has now four straight 20-point double-doubles, right? And it's unique because he says, I'll give you double-digit rebounds tonight. And the next time I was like, I'll give you double-digit assists. Over his last four games, Dan, 24.3 points per game on 58% shooting from the field. But that's not the stat. Here's the stat. You ready? What would you guess he's shooting from three over the course of the last four games?
Josh Giddey?
Yeah.
Oh, the last four games? It's got to be like 58%.
Or 78%.
Okay, yeah. He's been crazy.
He's making 3.5 out of every 4.5 threes. Now, that was a knock on his game in OKC is that he couldn't shoot, right? He wasn't a great...
Yeah, I think he's up to like 38% on the season, isn't he?
Yeah, he's averaged 24.3 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists per contest his last four games. This year, he's shooting 38% from three. He had never shot above 33.7% from three. That is a problem because the man with the money is going to have to pay him now more money at the end of the season. And I cannot see a situation in which Arturis Karnišovas trades away Alex Caruso and opts for this young player, the 21-year-old, over a number one draft pick.
Yeah, but
and then gets to the end of the season and says, we're just going to let you walk.
Well, we'll see. It's just a stretch of games. And I think Giddey is a classic empty calories player. I think he's a stuffer of a box score on a bad team. I think this is kind of what he does. Is that somebody's got to do all this stuff. He plays the minutes. His flaws are too much for me.
Can you put on the AK Virgil glasses?
Well, I'm not AK, and AK's going to get fired if this doesn't get better.
This
so
group is really good.
I'm not going to think like him. I'm going to think like me in this case, and that is, this is not a serious player. This is not a winning player.
What's the number on the offer sheet that's too high for you? Since you're not AK, you're Dan Bernstein.
That's too high for me in context?
Four years. How much are you giving him? And saying, yes, we will match.
I'm not sure I'm going to be interested in giving him anything.
Oh, so if he's available for $15 million a year, you wouldn't pay that?
I'd think about it. But it's some of what he does. If you look at how he comes out in total value, he's a great fantasy player. He's an incredible fantasy player.
Yes.
He's just not that valuable a basketball player because of the number of turnovers, because of the number of times he takes like these weird off balance floaters. He can make some spectacular passes. He's an amazing inbounds passer, but if he's motivated to play defense now because he's trying to make money, I get it. I don't trust him to continue to play defense. I don't trust him to continue to get better at it. And I think that these are soft numbers that he puts up on bad teams.
Let me give you a quote he gave Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times when asked about his recent play and what he's focused on for the rest of the season, knowing that it's a contract year. Quote, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't thinking about it. Every player in the league thinks about it, but I don't let it impact what I do on the floor. I don't come out here with any preconceived ideas of how I want to play or the numbers I want to put up to earn X amount of dollars or whatever it may be. That's Josh Giddey talking about his future. But man, he's got the pedigree as a former top 10 pick in the NBA draft. He's putting up the numbers. And it'd be different. I understand what you're saying about the empty calories. It would be different if he was doing this in Bulls blowouts. As you know, he's not doing it in Bulls blowouts. He's doing it in games in which the Bulls are competitive and putting on that compelling dinner theater that we talk about.
Yeah, I'm not in this for dinner theater.
I understand that. But if you're Michael Reinsdorf, or you're Arturis Karnišovas, and you attend these games, and you see the stands are full, and people are cheering, and they're holding their last breath all the way to the final minute of a game.
You know what it cost to get in that game last night?
How much?
What do you think?
To get in, I'll say 20.
10.
Okay, 10.
That's starting to matter.
Okay. But that's the resale value.
I'm just saying. That's
that, they were that's, bought at the price.
But,
and then,
but still, that the get-in price is something to watch. You're talking about, I mean, I know it's $3 in New Orleans. Like, that team knows how to do it.
$2. Well, it's also New Orleans. Since Hurricane Katrina, the population has declined by, like, what, 30, 40%?
But if you're talking about how, if they get Cooper Flag,
that's problematic.
With Trey Murphy and with guys that have come back from injuries on that team?
Herbert Jones.
I'm telling you, they're a problem.
Jordan Hawkins.
That's how you shooters. Do it. That's how you do it.
Or if San Antonio gets, let me be very clear. If San Antonio gets Cooper Flag, it's run it back, Robinson.
That's how you do it.
And those guys with De'Aaron Fox. Yeah, that's, whew.
Yeah, I'm really not looking at anybody on this current Bulls roster as being a materially important player with the possible exception of Matas Buzelis.
Yeah, in your eyes, Matas Buzelis is the only guy that would still be here when the Bulls are again good. Like, yeah, good, and, like, and top six in the East or top four even in the East, ready to make a charge at a playoffs, like one guy away from making a charge at a title.
And I like Buzelis, but I am not with those who believe he's necessarily on trajectory to be a star.
Right, he could be an important player. If he could be the third or fourth best player on a championship contender, okay, sign me up for that. Meanwhile, Josh Giddey, I could see him being the fifth or sixth best player on a contender.
And then if you want to put a price on that and say, hey, it's worth it at 15 or it's worth it at 18, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not.
But the show that we do after we find out his destination, and if it turns out it's Chicago and it's $30 million per year, people's heads are going to explode.
Well, yeah, and some should roll as well. When we come back, it is time for High Noon, and I just want to remember Gene Hackman a little bit as we're getting some reports as to how suspicious the deaths of Gene Hackman, his wife, and their dog may actually be. That's next.
Bernstein and Harris Show.
Ben Schwartz, our new friend.
I am blown away that this is happening. That was such a great question.
Middays Tindle 2.
Only a Chicago sports radio show. I'm so thrilled. Well, that was a very
knowledgeable. We're well-rounded crew around here.
On Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let me get this straight. You took all the money you made franchising your name and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters?
I thought the Generals were due. He's spinning the ball on his finger! Just take it! Take the ball! That game was fixed. They were using a freaking ladder, for God's sakes.
To this day, one of the greatest episodes of one of the greatest shows of all time. But this is no joke, this story, at all. So, bear with me here. There's absolutely no way I'm going to be able to get to every detail in here with the murders and the international mystery and the people who have disappeared. But this feeds in. If you are of the mind that there are nefarious forces keeping you from winning money,
of course there are.
You're going to want to put on a lobster bib and get yourself extra napkins and clarified butter for this one. So this is two writers whom I respect tremendously. These are absolute pros in Michael Rosenberg and Pat Forty of Sports Illustrated. Here's your lead graph. Last month, a little-known sports gambler who calls himself the best that ever did it attempted to board a flight from Las Vegas to Colombia, connecting through Panama with a one-way ticket. Shane Hennon soon found himself in an upright and locked position. Federal agents who arrested him say he was carrying multiple cell phones, nearly $10,000 in cash, and an alibi he offered unprompted that he was traveling to Colombia for dental treatment. Authorities say Hennon helped orchestrate what appears to be one of the most pervasive point-shaving scandals in North American sports history. This touches both pro and college basketball. It has already generated a few headlines, but the sports world has not come to grips with just how widespread this scheme could be. In a court filing last month, the office of acting U.S. Attorney Carolyn Picorni of the Eastern District of New York vouched for substantial evidence that Hennon was involved in, quote, illicit financial transactions and fraudulent sports wagers totaling millions of dollars, resulting in potentially millions of dollars worth of illicit profits and money laundering transactions. So, yes, this does involve Toronto Raptors forward Jonte Porter, who has been banned for life from the NBA, admitted taking himself out of games, pleaded guilty to federal conspiracy. Terry Rozier with the Miami Heat, currently under federal investigation for his performance in 2023. The league is cooperating with the Eastern District. Rozier has not been charged with a crime. And they go through the Porter stuff here, saying he amassed significant gambling debts, and they were flagging all kinds of unusual wagering. The Justice Department alleges Hennon had five co-conspirators just for the Porter scheme alone. Four have been publicly identified. Three, Timothy McCormick, Mahmoud Mala, and Long Phi Pham, pleaded guilty to wire fraud conspiracy. A grand jury indicted the fourth, Amar Awade, for conspiracy to commit wire fraud and conspiracy to influence sporting contests by bribery. The Justice Department said Hennon will be charged with wire fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering, but has delayed officially charging him while he negotiates a plea. That's critical here if you're following this, because he could flip on everybody. So the U.S. attorney said he was trying to flee the country before January 15th deadline. There's all the stuff from what the lawyers are saying. This guy Hennon is a shady character. He has been charged with all kinds of different crimes, including aggravated assault and reckless endangerment with a stabbing, a felony facsimile bomb charge, drug distribution. And the tendrils of this are tracked through his betting slips, which Hennon has posted. He has taken they've got all the pictures. They've got the phone, and he's posted pictures of his betting slips on his Instagram account, including a $300,000 wager on a single Duke, Virginia men's basketball game. One Las Vegas casino executive spoke on a condition of anonymity, saying they wouldn't accept a wager that large. Some of his other bets are more obscure. $100,000 on Loyola Chicago against Tulsa, $28,500 on Ball State Kent State, $60,000 on Toledo against Buffalo. And he also posted on Instagram that he was wagering $155,000 on two first half spreads. This is going to emerge as something important here. And their speculation is that any players may be involved in a first half spread scam could still then try to win the game and could say under oath and on a polygraph that they were trying to win the game. $70,000 on Iowa State's first half against Baylor last year or 2 years ago. Iowa State covered by 15. $85,000 on Tennessee's first half against Auburn that he covered. In the Big South Conference, Longwood was bet on to cover its 3.5-point first half spread against Campbell. And the big one was a $75,000 bet for Drake to cover a 9.5-point spread against Murray State. So, and they say here, curious does not mean criminal. There is no information specifically indicating the games were rigged. But the legitimacy of the gambling winnings has been in question for a while. And apparently he had an issue. There are people who believe he's been cheating at poker, with loaded decks and colluding with others. And he has tried to pass himself off as in poker tournaments as someone who he is not. And now there's been a gambling watchdog firm called Integrity Compliance 360 that's been getting reports from offshore casinos about unusual betting on five temple games. This had to do with a game at Charlotte, Wichita State, Tulsa, and Alabama, Birmingham. And that has been arousing enough scrutiny that it's that they're following these betting patterns.
Then there's also the, is it manslaughter charge? Dating back to 2011, where that was curious in how the sentencing happened, they decided
that they skipped the jury and
yeah,
the judge.
I mean the amount of abnormalities in the actual results that are reported. That's what makes this so intricate.
And this raised my eyebrows too. In the as they're probing these temple games, the name they're looking at is Hysir Miller, the Temple leading scorer at 15.9 points a game last year. After last season, Hysir Miller transferred to Virginia Tech, but never played there. He was dismissed from the team in October for what the university described as circumstances prior to his enrollment at Virginia Tech. Sources confirmed that Miller's performances at Temple were part of federal and NCAA probes. He is now playing professionally in Germany, and his attorney declined comment. The NCAA has also formally opened an investigation at Eastern Michigan. There are requests for cell phone data for five individuals at Eastern Michigan whose names are redacted. North Carolina A&T has a game under scrutiny. Mississippi Valley State is under scrutiny. So if gamblers and game fixers were indeed at work at those schools, they preyed on some of the least funded teams and athletic programs in NCAA Division I.
Mm-hmm.
This involves a network of proxies and straw bettors located across the country. And one name as a possible co-conspirator is Marvis Fairley of Mississippi.
Which is where the reference to the charge comes in from 2011 regarding the FBI informant.
Mm-hmm. Because he was indicted for murdering a man in the witness protection program.
Yeah. And the results therein were confounding.
I'm telling you, this is, if you read this report, it is in my Twitter feed. It is in my Blue Sky feed. I think Ray is going to retweet this. You've got to read this.
It has everything, essentially.
It's fabulous reporting. The reason they have journalistic awards is for stuff like this. So just stay tuned. And I'm surprised that it hasn't gotten more traction. Like this is not some, you know, rando publication. This is not piecing together somebody's Instagrams or something on Reddit. This is Michael Rosenberg and Pat Forte of Sports Illustrated.
What's disturbing is it makes you really wonder about everything as far as the legalization of gambling and college sports. We've seen tastes of this, little bits and pieces, but when they start putting it all together, yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions.
Well, but obviously the argument for legalization is to get it all out there. Have these regulatory agencies, because if it's not legal, there's no accountability and everything's under the table.
Right.
By making it legal, you also create these enforcement bodies that then have laws at their disposal.
But unfortunately, the argument against legalization is the story like this, right? That's how detractors would say.
I don't think so, because there's nothing about legalization that makes this more or less likely.
When you involve players, though, and you involve this many schools, is quite a takedown.
Well, sure. I mean, when it was going on with Tulane back in the 80s, or when it happened with Northwestern basketball here in the 80s, back to CCNY in the 50s, it was the illegality that made it flourish, that made it thrive. The fact that it was all operating unregulated, and it was all in the netherworld.
There's no doubt you need regulation on these things. Period. Like that increases the size of an agency. Everybody get scared. Yeah, but well, it's it's best for all involved, including innocent people trying to do the norm when it comes to wagering.
Yeah, you've got enough forces involved here, whether it's the leagues themselves or all of our gambling partners, to want to make sure that this stuff is on the up and up.
But when you see quotes like, games like that are exactly why sports books have limits, or you point out like this individual involved who's first mentioned is well known in Philadelphia at Rivers Casino there, you know, the reason there are people paying attention, you know, the oversight. But to see how one part of something became like the tip of the iceberg, for example, in one story involving an NBA player, turns out that was the very beginning of something, you know, and to connect all those things. That's the other piece of this.
I do think that there is a reasonable concern about availability of gambling at everybody's phone all the time, contributing to the kinds of losses that force somebody like Jontay Porter to have to listen when somebody whispers in their ear about a way to pay off some of these debts.
Absolutely. That'd be my number one thing. It's the access that is driving this home harder than otherwise maybe have if you had to go somewhere and place the bet.
Well, also the predatory nature, right?
And everything.
Yes.
Man, because this, I'm just saying, stay tuned. All I wanted to do at the very least was make you aware of this. And to make sure that the next time that the headline comes out, or you say, is this connected, or why do I remember this name, read this whole thing and just be very, very aware of big stuff that's going on.
The details about the lines moving is very important. It's a lot.
Lines weren't moving. They were jumping.
Sliding Fair and
enough.
Jumping.
Yeah.
This segment brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today.